Welcome to Serving Aces. I'm Alexander Stevenson, and I'm here tonight with my co-host Oog Levadier, aka Oogie. Welcome, Oogie.
Thank you, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing well. How's your week been?
Very nice. A lot of action, you know, tennis and pickleball and golf actually started this week. You know, golf course has cleared out for the snow, so some clubs are open now. So it's a great time of the year, you know, for us. You know, spring's there, so a lot of outdoor activities can start finally.
Oh, right?
Finally. After the Masters for us, then it starts to clear out and we can do outdoor stuff. So, yeah.
Well, I heard you're 10 times into pickleballing and you feel like you're ready to go and you know what you're doing now.
A little bit more, of course, because at first I was just a banger. I was just hard-hitting balls like in tennis. But then I'm like missing here and there and guys were like just avoiding the ball and it would fly into the wall behind. So now I'm dinking a little bit more, like those drop shots. And then when it sets
some
up,
touch.
Boom, a little bit in the feet. And it's got the tactics going.
Out of that kitchen, right?
Oh, we can't be in there unless the ball, just bounces. So
see, I know some terms, Oogie.
There you go.
The kitchen.
Next time we see each other in the U.S., definitely we'll play pickleball.
That's
It'll be fun.
That's all I know. But
With your one-hand or backhand, your setup is fine.
I think I'd be good. I played a little crack the egg with my high schooler. He loves it. We played three sets to five, and he thinks he can always beat me, but I always give him a set, and then I just kill him.
There you go. You
and
let him have hope.
Like, I let him have a set, and he's like, I'm the best. And I'm like, I wouldn't boast yet, and then I beat him like 5-0. Jeez. And then I give him a little points, and it's like 5-2 or 5-3 in the third.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So
you had some good dubs.
Very upset.
You played some good dubs as well, huh?
I did. I played a little 8-game pro set today. It was
nice.
A lot of fun with some high schoolers. And then Pam's son, George, is coming back to tennis, and he wants to play some college tennis soon. Hopefully junior college tennis. So I partnered with him. He's 4 days in, Oogie. So
jeez.
He still has skills though. So
okay, he played before, right?
Okay. But he's like four days back from like a 4-year hiatus.
Oof.
So I have to say we did win.
There
I
you
wasn't
go.
Going down.
You said your mind was like, I'm not losing.
I'm not losing. It was 5-all. It was close. We it was close in the beginning. We had to find our footing, and then we won 3 straight. Took them
there
out.
You go. That's it. So that
but hopefully Sam, George's brother, and his doubles partner have a league tournament this week in doubles. So hopefully they're going to take the beating we gave them. And
exactly.
Win a couple matches.
Hey, that happens. And then they learn from it and then they move on and they win.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, it was like after 7 hours of playing with all the students and my legs were tired and I followed my full WTA recovery plan. I took a cold shower. I changed my clothes. I ate some carbs. I took some electrolytes and I was ready to go. It was like in a tournament when you're in a rain delay and you got to play 2 singles matches and a doubles. That's what I felt like.
There you go. You use your experience.
I got through it. Yep. I got through it. So it was good. And we came out with a win.
Oh, there you go. That's nice. Love
you
it.
You can't go down to high schoolers and let them win, right?
Yeah. Your pride just stepped in there.
Oh yeah. No way. I wasn't going to let them win. I was nice. There was a couple times I was nice and I didn't poach.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I doing? And then you miss the shot because you're holding back.
Exactly.
And then you just, you got to go.
It's
you
true.
Can't hold back.
You're right. We have to just do it because otherwise it changes. It alters your thinking and then you're missing or it goes soft and then you pay the price for it. They punish
you.
Yeah,
and it's interesting when I was doing that because I feel like when I'm teaching some students that don't really know their positioning, mm-hmm. And now I kind of understand how they feel where I'm like, how did you not make that shot? Well, it's because they weren't in position of their body. And when I'm missing, it's because I didn't go as big or I wasn't as explosive because I was mm-hmm. trying not to be too tough. But I can kind of feel like what they feel like a little bit. It doesn't feel good, Oogie. You don't feel loose and free.
You're right. It's like, what am I feeling right now? I've never felt that.
Yeah, I was like, what? Just play. So anyway, hey, it was fun.
Just play, just like Rude today, huh? Because he got his revenge on Tsitsipas.
Oh, I liked your segue there, Oogie. Yes, Rude won Barcelona.
Huge.
In two sets, too. 7-5, 6-3. See. He changed his game plan.
What do you think happened there? Because he lost in the final the other day at Monte Carlo, right? Against him. And then, you know, he got crushed a little bit. So what happened today? What do you think was the little different there?
Well, he had a lot of trouble in Monte Carlo. So the court, look, the court's clay. So it's going to be a little slower, a little faster. This one seemed maybe slightly slower than Monte Carlo from the television. I'm not on the court. But also, it seemed like Rude was more prepared to set himself up for the right shot. Mm-hmm. And in Monte Carlo, Tsitsipas, look, his serve toss was all over the place. His serve percentage was low, but he was playing attacking clay court style tennis that he can play and still moving into the court. And Rude was way far back. He was far back in the court. And he didn't alter his return stance at all. And it was shocking because Tsitsipas, you knew the serve and volley was coming and Rude was still 10 feet behind the baseline. Well, in Barcelona, he was standing back, but then moving up. So he was taking a big step up and getting his weight into the shot on his returns. And then that puts you in the controlled, aggressive position he could be. And it let him use his backhand down the line. And a lot of the time, his backhand passing shots were really working well. And Tsitsipas just couldn't close into the net. So that's what I saw. He stepped up his game by becoming a little more offensive. And we know Rude likes to play the defense. He plays a good mix, right?
Yeah.
But his game, his comfortable positioning is more defensive and then aggressive. It's not like to be aggressive from the beginning.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at Tsitsipas, he wants to be the aggressor, but he has patience.
You're right. I didn't watch a whole lot of that match because we had a lot of things to do today. I mean, Sunday, so it's like family day.
Yep.
Super busy all over. Went to Costco, bought some stuff, and then friends over, and then a lot of activities. But I saw one game, which was beginning of the match, 2-0 for Tsitsipas. He's in command. Rude is serving, and suddenly that's exactly what happened. He played close to the baseline. His backhand went two-hander, really strong cross-court. Tsitsipas missed a down-line backhand, really woofed it a little bit and didn't control it. And then another point just like that, Tsitsipas was late in the rally. So at that point, I'm like, okay, this is a big difference from Monte Carlo. He's close to the baseline. His back end is smoking cross court to Tsitsipas' one-hander, which he's got the advantage right there.
Yes.
So if that was the story of the match, then I can really see that Rude was dictating most points and he was able to, you know, impose himself.
The first set was close and then 6-3. He was up 4-1 at one point in the second, and it was kind of just like all he wrote. He was going to win that set because he found his game. And it shows you that, especially when you're learning how to play on the tour or you're learning how to play junior tennis or college tennis, you can play the same person 2 weeks in a row. Yeah. And just because you beat them the first time, it doesn't mean you're going to beat them again when you're at such a similar level. So like on the pro tour, Rude and Tsitsipas, their level, maybe percentage points difference, right?
Oh, yeah, it's really
on
close.
Some given days, very close.
Yeah.
It shows you what the coaching and maybe statistics and how they analyzed, how Rude's team analyzed that match in Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
And obviously Tsitsipas' team analyzed it, but he had the win. So maybe they didn't go as much into detail as Rude's team did. And Rude came out and won. So look, you can win the first time, you can lose the second time. You can win two times, lose the third. That's what tennis is so cool, because you can always change your strategy up.
You're totally right. I mean, it's one thing really. They changed one thing, which is probably
the return of serve. Basically,
Exactly.
Standing. That was the most noticeable difference, at least to the viewer.
Yeah, you're totally right. And you have these stats right now because, you know, when you see that on TV sometimes in between sets, they're gonna show the statistics of where the contact points, the average time, you know. Medvedev is like 24 feet behind the baseline. Suddenly he's 12 feet behind the baseline. Oh, he's winning that set. And the other one, he lost it. And those things are very important because it's always a matter of controlling the baseline. Tennis is still that. It is still a matter of controlling the baseline.
Well said, Oogie. Controlling the baseline.
That's exactly it. I mean, that's what I'm teaching every day. And controlling the baseline is so crucial because once you do that, you dictate, and if you lose, it's your fault. If you win, it's good. It's you. Because the opponent is really moving more left to right, and then suddenly you can set up a drop shot more. So if you control that baseline, and we talked about that, and we worked on that on quick surfaces, right? Indoors, grass, we were both like really...
That was all the time, controlling the center of the court, controlling the baseline.
Exactly, and you were hitting on the rise a lot, and that one hitter was smoking. And so if you did that, there's not a whole lot of time to run around the backhand, though. That's the one thing which is a little bit, you know, it's more like Agassi was playing like that. He was controlling the baseline, hitting on the rise, backhands with smoking, forehand, not a whole lot of running around. If somebody's standing further from the baseline, like Nadal, or then they can really go around more. And because you have to be super quick to run around if you're standing close to the baseline.
Nadal can control the baseline from anywhere, right? I mean, any position, at least. Course. Nadal that isn't coming back.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
we gotta talk a little bit about. He won one match. He went
We can definitely segue to to Nadal, to use your term, because that's a great segue right there. Because I mean, sad story, but then you can tell it. You know whatever happened to.
No, it's not a sad story.
It's last time he plays that tournament,
but it's
though.
Okay, I'm gonna give you a quote that he said. Okay.
Here you go.
I'm aware that everything has a beginning and an end, Nadal said. Mm-hmm. Knowing he wouldn't be back to the Barcelona event, he's won 12 times. Jeez. Okay, so it's a little sad, yes.
Sure.
But he's won the event 12 times.
That's happy.
He has a great perspective because he's a veteran. He's been through it. Mm-hmm. He's working really hard to get to the French Open and to be the big battler that he can be, the king of the clay, right?
Yeah.
But he's aware that there's an end and he's not in denial about it. So that's positive. For us fans, it's sad, but there's a rainbow at the end of the story.
Okay, let me ask you this. If he says that, and of course he's always honest when he's saying so, do you really think that what he said right there is the whole thing is what he's feeling right now? Because to me, there's no way that he's not super sad about what's going on right now.
Of course he's disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course he's a competitor and he's an athlete. And he doesn't want to go out in the second round of Barcelona. The court's named after him, Oogie.
Exactly.
But I think he realizes that he's fortunate to be on the court playing tennis.
Mm-hmm.
Last year he wasn't in... After surgery, he was being wheeled out in a wheelchair. Jeez. So all of us know what it look when you have surgery, you understand what it feels like. It's traumatic.
Exactly.
So the fact that he got out on his court, won a match, lost to Demonar. Look, Demonar is a tough player to play, even on clay. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a tough second round. I think Nadal's happy. He's walking away finishing two matches.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking to see the next. Now, he's left some hints. It's gonna be interesting about the clay. He's left some hints in his quotes of what's going to happen at the French. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think Barcelona was – he wanted to get there to at least finish some matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah,
we'll see.
Tough situation. I mean,
tough. Look, nobody wants to see him go out not 100% and fighting like the bull he is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you'd rather have somebody
including
take it.
Nadal himself.
It's true. But, hey, let's face it. The majority of the time, that somebody has a great career is going to end up, you know, saying goodbye because of injuries. That's just the truth.
Yeah, especially now in tennis that there's such longevity and you can play to your late 30s and 40s. We watched Serena. She played at the U.S. Open. She made a brilliant comeback from not winning in the summer to then stringing together some tournaments. Now, was she 100% fit? No. And ready to go? She did as much as her body could do at that point. And then she was like, okay, I'm good. I'm going to go have a kid. And she brought the house down, right? Yep. That's the way to do it. So what we hope for Rafa is he brings the house down at the French Open, a la Jimmy Connors. So
that would be awesome.
I think he wants to do that. That's one thing I never had a chance to do. So I understand. Mm. I don't understand his perspective because I'm not Nadal, but I do have empathy towards the way he feels because he wants to have the moment.
Oh yeah.
And I think he'll get it.
Hopefully.
And you kind of want that. You don't want to just walk away from your career and not have a moment.
Exactly. You're right. That's, and to me in Barcelona, that can't be it. So
no,
hopefully
it's not going to be Barcelona. Hopefully.
No,
not.
I know. Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm saying. Hopefully he gets a great French Open. He's got a celebration before or after his first round, that just, you know, to make sure that something's happening there for him and the crowd just goes nuts and music and anything.
Speaking of who had a moment in the wrong way, Oogie. Okay. Stefanos has had a really good 2 weeks. Finals of Barcelona, wins Monte Carlo. Mm-hmm. But come on. Why are you sticking your foot in your mouth, as he's done in the past, and saying that Nadal is the favorite to win the French?
No way. He said that?
Yes, he said that. And then Nadal took umbrage, followed it up, and said, it's stupid to think that. Everyone knows I'm no longer the favorite to win the tournament.
It's like,
so Nadal's calling him out. And Tsitsipas is just being like, oh, I'm so like esoteric and let's have the earth be free and take care of the earth because it's Earth Day on tomorrow.
Okay.
And yet he flies on planes every week. So how much is he really taking care of the earth? Now, I've never met him, but he is funny to listen to because he does. He's kind of like a poet stuck from like the 1500s, and he should have, or, you know, one of those troubadours.
You're
and
right.
He has these views and it's
and look.
His look, right? He just needs like a page boy hat or one of those troubadour hats. But
seriously,
come on, Nadal is not the favorite to win the French.
Yeah,
he's more the favorite right now.
Yeah, there's more chances that Tsitsipas wins the French than Nadal, for sure.
Nadal.
For sure. Come on. So, I don't know why he said that.
I think maybe he was caught unawares and he's just like thinking 14 times, Nadal. It's just so bizarre.
I mean, I think he was just, he said that probably to just give him a tribute and say, you had a great career.
But come
you're
on, even
still
Nadal's
the favorite.
Like, come on, dude.
Dude,
don't give me that kind of tribute.
My hips like are hurting when I get out of bed.
Don't
so come
call
on.
Me the favorite.
he's the goat on clay, that's for sure. But I guess it was just some, I think it was mark of respect and everything. But he must have said something like, well, okay, maybe not. At the end, he should have corrected himself. Like, okay, maybe that's wishful thinking, but for sure, there's
I don't know.
He's so many great players.
He's the cool guy. Like he's the cool guy in school that is kind of like dorky, but he's cool because he has status from I don't know, from doing something. So, but then he just sticks his foot in his mouth all the time. That's what it kind of seems like.
You're right. I mean, if we were being honest, I mean, Sinner, Alcaraz. I mean, these guys are favorites to win. You know,
like, come on,
the French and even Djokovic.
Rafa, but
I mean, Djokovic
what
is
about,
way more than Nadal right now.
So anyway, moving forward, maybe Stefanos will come up with something entertaining in Madrid to say next. All right,
sure.
So we got Sloane Stephens. We have an American winning a tournament on clay. She likes clay. Sloane came back into the winner's circle, beating Magda Linette in northern France. You want to say the city?
In Rouen.
Rouen.
Yeah, that's it.
Rouen.
You okay. got it.
That was a good tournament for her. We had Stuttgart, Miss Rybakina.
Oh, yeah.
Won a Porsche and had to get driven out because she doesn't have a driver's license.
Oh, that's funny.
So, Oogie, now in the tournament, you went to the tournament with me and it was on hard court. Now it's on clay in a big stadium. Jeez. So the player that wins goes back and then they drive.
Yeah, that's true. I remember.
So she drove out in the passenger side.
Yeah, I remember Sharapova and Hingis. They drove.
They get to drive. So
that's funny.
Miss Rybakina needs to work on getting her license soon. Well, since now she has a brand new Porsche.
These young tennis players, especially women, they don't really care about driving sometimes. Yeah, so they're very young. They go on tour whole year. They're not taking their driver's license.
You never drive.
That's right.
I didn't even have a car the first couple of years because I just didn't drive anywhere. I got driven everywhere.
People that are listening need to know that, once you play a tournament like you did your whole career, you get picked up at the airport, you get picked up from the hotel, you go to the tournament with the official transportation. I remember in Montreal, there's Mercedes all over the place driving people, from the hotel to the court, whenever time you want. So you never get the chance to drive, right?
Yeah, and it's lovely. You go into a tournament, they have official transportation for you. Mostly all the tournaments around the world on the smaller tour, like not the Grand Slams. Mm-hmm. I think those drivers get paid. But a lot of the tournaments, the drivers are volunteers that love tennis.
That's right.
So you meet amazing people that drive you in the city you're in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they live there. So they know what's up, for restaurants and nightclubs.
Yeah,
and you just ask them anything you want and you know what's up.
You know, a restaurant. So it's a lot of fun. It's just, you don't really rent a car and drive. Sometimes you do if you have to get to another city and you can't take a train or a plane.
That's true.
Then you rent a car. But so Miss Rybakina has a cool Porsche to learn how to drive in.
That's true. And going back to these volunteers, they have a lot of great stories to tell because a lot of times they connect with a great player and they keep being their driver for the whole week for the next years to come. Yep. So I remember somebody in Montreal has told me a lot of stories about Federer and Djokovic because he was the driver of these guys. So it's pretty cool.
Well, and once you have a driver and you win, then you request that said driver.
Yeah,
and then you keep winning. You have to have the same driver every day.
Superstition. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and that's most tennis players. You're going to have that same driver every day.
For sure. Yeah, it's like good luck charm.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we have Madrid coming up. Qualifying starts tomorrow. It's a 10-day tournament. It's a big tournament. WTA 1000, ATP 1000, and guess what, Oogie? That is where I said the meeting of the minds are happening.
Oh.
The big meeting about Liv, not Liv, that's the golf.
That's okay.
Arabia, Dubai,
thinking. Yeah.
Qatar. Mm-hmm. They're going to meet with the ATP. I don't know if the Grand Slams are going to be there. So interesting to see what will shake out in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, a lot of stuff to learn there. And you've been really keen on this subject because you've been really aware. Last fall, even you start talking about that, and you have a crystal ball in front of you, Alex. You know what's going on and what's going to come up. So, we can't wait to see exactly what's going to come out of those meetings, what's going to be the plan for the next years to come. And we're going to talk about that for sure. As soon as there's news,
we're going to know.
You'll be on top of that.
One of the things we do know is the WTA signed a 2-year deal with Saudi Arabia for the year-end championships in the city of Jeddah until 2026. And Martina Navratilova has already come out and said she will not be calling the women's championship because as a gay woman, she is concerned about human rights in the country. She likened the same thing as putting the women in North Korea, Oogie.
Jeez, okay. Not quite the same, but I can see what you're saying.
Well, look, Martina always states her mind, and that's why, look, she's a great champion, but even a better person because she always tells her truth, and that's her truth, and I love that she said it, and she doesn't feel that the tour should be there. I don't know the politics of it. I know Saudi Arabia is trying to open up their country to more people visiting, So time will tell, but she is a gay woman and she has a perspective of where she doesn't feel safe. So to her, it is like going to North Korea.
Yeah. I mean, her and everybody else being gay. I mean, if it's really not tolerable or you're, you know, it's a tough cookie to, you know, to swallow and to be there and to feel like free, and it's tough. Really hard situation there. So I can really see.
Very interesting though, that WTA went for the money, and hey, maybe they went for the money and to bridge a gap of what's missing in the Middle East. So I know they've been doing a lot of things with Jabir and women's rights, and they have a whole initiative that they launched in Dubai and Qatar this year. So maybe they will build bridges to more women in sports being accepted, and who knows, maybe this is a good thing.
Change
could be a coming, Oogie.
That's true. But then, yeah, I mean,
you never know.
It's tough because whenever you speak, you know, whenever you speak and you talk about sports, we know that sports, normally you don't have that. It's sports. So there's no gender, there's no religion, there's nothing like that. You know, it's not like, it's sports. You play on the field, on the court, and you compete and as equal, and that's it. And that's what's beautiful about sports, because it's going to be laid on the court or on the field, soccer, yes. Soccer, hockey, baseball, football, tennis, all these sports, it's there. You play, you watch, you win, you lose, that's it. You shake hands, great, that's it. There's no, well, I'm from there and this and that. And so it's, and then when you have to be, it's our values in North America, and then suddenly you have Middle East and or Asia or, you know, different places. It's different values, it's different mœurs in French.
Well, different cultures.
Different culture, exactly. So, hey, it's not because it's not the same that it's wrong or good, or it's not like that. So to me, it's tough to judge. But as soon as you say women's right or equal, that's tough to see, because in, you know, in US and Canada, we're free countries, and, you know, women and men, and we're all the same. You know, we work for the same places and same salaries and stuff like that. So,
well. I mean, don't say all the same, Oogie.
Well, it's thriving that way.
It's getting there. I don't know if it's the same. That's what salaries still. But
yeah, I'm saying
more equal.
It's thriving that way.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
There's women lawyers that are making more than men's lawyers. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
it's because they're more competent, more great. And so it can be like that. In those countries, sometimes you cannot even be a lawyer, or you cannot even vote, or you can. So it's really not the same, but.
But maybe that's why the tour wants to go in there to help change.
Hey,
and
could
be a great thing, right, Oogie?
Could be.
We will see. And look, Jabir is an ambassador to a lot of women of Arab culture. And so she represents a clothing line from, I think, one of the royal women designed it. She's now wearing it. So maybe the royal family of Saudi Arabia and their backers, maybe they're getting more progressive, and we'll see a change.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's, I mean, I don't think the tour goes there to change lives over there. I mean, that's.
Well, obviously, for 2 years, they can't change lives. But hey, one small step could make a difference. It could have a ripple effect.
Hey, I'm thinking more like, okay, new market, openings, a lot of money in art. So for sure, those are the reasons to go.
A lot of money and a new market.
That's the number one thing. I mean, come on, trust me. It's
Why they went to China, right? And China didn't really work out.
Well, there you go. And then Rory McIlroy got offered $850 million to play in the Live League. So he's thinking about it. You know, he's not like, no right away. Before, it was no right away. And he's been one of the best advocates for the PGA Tour. There's no way that Rory or Tiger would go play Live. But he's been offered that much money, and he's thinking about it. But who wouldn't think about it? Come on, $850 million?
I'd think about it for sure.
You're set. Your kids are set. The kids of their kids are set. The kids of your kids. Come on, everybody's set. So you can give foundations. You can do a lot of things. You can build, you know, golf courses. I mean, it's so much money. So you have to think about that. But
you do.
Then it changes sometimes because Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, famous soccer player, there's a rule that you have to be married to live with your wife, to live with your, you know, your girlfriend.
Yes.
And I think he wasn't married. So, and then they had to change the law over there because he couldn't.
Or him.
He couldn't stay at the same place with his girlfriend because he was not married with the lady. So then they changed the rule in the law because, come on, to stay with a, you know, a man and a woman together, it's, come on, you can stay together in an apartment and not be married. You could be friends. You could be, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
But the good news is they changed the rule for him to
exactly.
get there.
So for they him can and change, then for society right? as well. So then there's evolved there. So you're right. There's actually could be really
there's
positive things going.
There's room to grow. So exactly. I think you think positive and see what happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking exactly. of, you just talked about Ronaldo, famous soccer players. The Madrid tournament's going starting, right? Qualies is starting tomorrow. And Świątek has made the rounds. Osaka, they're all going to Real Madrid. They're all getting jerseys.
Wow.
And
for sure.
They're having their fun. So Real Madrid has become the thing to go visit while in Madrid before they start their main draw matches.
Imagine you went to see FC Barcelona this week, and then the week after that is Real Madrid.
Cool,
so the
huh?
best two clubs.
The best two clubs.
In Spain.
So the women, at least the women, I don't know, maybe Tsitsipas will pop up. I know in Monte Carlo they met some F1 drivers. Mm. The race car drivers were there. So pretty cool stuff. I like how sports is crossing over, obviously, with more social media and more connections at tournaments. Now the players get to meet all different kinds of athletes. And I think that's really cool.
It is
all right,
cool.
So Oogie,
cool.
We got to get to the ball is in your court. What is your topic tonight?
Oh, topic tonight is going to be about clay court. I mean, what do you need to have to be a great clay court player,
well,
right?
'Tis the season.
Really, it's amazing. We're setting up the French Open in a couple of weeks, and we're looking at all these players that are playing right now that are winning, especially on the men's side, because let's talk about men's side first. I mean, you've got Ruud, Tsitsipas, you know, you can put in the mix, of course, the great, you know, Nadal when he was on top. And then, of course, Alcaraz. And, you know, all these guys have some things together, some strength. I mean, first of all, I think their footwork, their court coverage, that's the number one thing right there. Because on clay, the ball slows down when it touches the ground and you get to more balls, but then you need to bring it back like good quality. Otherwise, you'll get killed. You just get, you know, boot off the court. So court coverage is great. And you know how to slide. You have to know how to slide on the, because we worked on that and it was not as natural for some players, but that's okay. You know, we're born on clay.
All right. It wasn't as natural for me.
Hey, that's it. I mean, I was
born.
But
then you learn to like it.
You learn or not. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Because there's some, especially American players, that have never liked to play on clay, and they said it openly, and it's fine.
Oh,
and
even, I was one.
And
I was
even
one of them.
A Kyrgios said that he hated clay, so.
Yeah, because you know, he grew up in Australia. Look, when you grow up in a hard court nation,
exactly.
It's hard to love the clay. You know how many times I've said I hated clay? I could have $500 million, Oogie, right now if if I got paid $1 million every time I hated clay.
Hey, let's think about U.S., Canada, Russia, Australia, Great Britain.
Yeah.
There's some countries
Medvedev always says he hates clay, which is even funnier because he won Rome last year. And now he has to come back as the defending champion.
You're right. And he played a lot of his tennis when he was younger in France. So he learned how to play on clay for sure.
He did learn, but he still does not like it.
Hey, he doesn't like it because it's not like a fit for his strokes. He hits flat and he stays back and
didn't like it either. He'd just fly to the French to play the French, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, because we're going to talk about the draw when it comes out and everything, but then you can see South Americans, Europeans, those guys you don't want to play on clay really because they know how to play on clay. They're born.
French players, they're born to play on clay.
Spanish,
okay,
Argentinians, it's tough to play.
What makes a successful clay courter, Oogie? So let's say, look at Sinner, okay? Sinner plays pretty well on clay. He grew up in Italy. But if you look at Sinner's game, you're going to say hard court.
Yeah. He's more of a hardcore player for sure. I mean, if that's a great comparison right there. We've got Jannik Sinner, hardcore player, and Alcaraz has always played a lot of tennis on his hard courts when he was growing up. Not as much.
So Alcaraz and Sinner.
He's not a true clay court. These guys are hard courters.
Now let's put in Nadal and
Tsitsipas. Yeah, Tsitsipas, Rude. These guys are clay courters. So we talk about footwork, but all these guys move great. So you have to talk about height above the net. To me, that's the best criteria because Sinner and Alcaraz, these guys hit more flat, and their balls are 2 to 3 feet above the net. That's it. They're gonna stay there the whole rally.
Yes.
Tsitsipas and Ruud, these guys are 4 to 5 feet above the net. Much higher, loopier shot, more topspin. So that ball is way harder to play for me, in my opinion, on clay court because it's going to hit the dirt and that dirt is unstable on the ground, right? It can move all the way. So it moves the clay and it bounces really high and it go a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. You kind of don't know really exactly the direction of that ball. So it makes it much tougher to rally with and to rally deep because you can rally, but if it lands short, you're going to get attacked. Yeah. So that's way tougher. That's the best quality of a clay quarter. The height above the net and that top spin, really heavy. Mooster, Bruguera, all these clay quarters.
You know, Quirton.
Yeah.
One-hander. One-hander on clay is tough, right? So Federer had trouble because he always had to play lefty Nadal to win the French, right? So one-hander, it's hard to get those high balls up. But Quirton was just built for it. He was just... That was his shot. Yeah. Now, Ruud, okay, we think clay quarter. But remember, Ruud got to the finals of the U.S. Open as well. And the U.S. Open is a hard court.
It's true.
He was playing pretty fast.
Yeah.
So he's interesting because when he wants to be, he's adaptable. Nadal started out clay quarter, but of course we know he's one of the greatest of all time. He's very adaptable.
Oh, for sure. He won Wimbledon. Who could believe that? I never thought Nadal
and
could
the
win
US
Wimbledon
Open.
Ever.
Yeah. So the old school Nadal first coming up, no chance. But then he adapted to playing on the tour to become a great champion. Ruud is interesting because he looks like he doesn't adapt, but then he kind of sneaks up on you and he adapts.
You're right.
Right.
The Iceman just, you stay calm. So that's one thing. When you stay calm on the court, you can actually think more. So you analyze the other one. You're like, okay, he's doing this.
And he's not going to rip shots like Alcaraz, but he can defend hard shots and put them in pinpoint positions to make it tough on a hard court.
Yeah, he's tough to, exactly. And when he rallies, he really does rally. So he's not going to miss. He's going to play deep. And as soon as it's a little bit shorter, he's going to make you pay the price.
Yeah.
So Alcaraz just goes more for his shots. But then Ruud is really patient, puts everything back real nice and deep, and he's waiting for that one shot, which is a little shorter. He's going to put some pressure on you.
Yes.
So,
now Alcaraz 4.0, should we say, because he won Indian Wells by being more patient.
Yeah.
He has a bit of an arm issue, so we're going to see if he comes out in Madrid. But I think this clay season should be interesting if he is healthy enough and he takes what Ferrero have been working with him on being a little more patient.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And
that's going to be awesome. I can't wait to see
that.
We
add in Sinner, who has become more patient as well, but also stronger.
Yeah.
And able to control the center of the court with the big shots, but also patient. So coming into the French, there's a lot of room for interesting matchups.
That's true. That's true, because especially Sinner, because Sinner is the one who hits the hardest ball right now on tour. You can see what the stats after the match, the RPMs on forehands and back, even backhands, he's dominating the backhand column. So that's what he's improved a lot, because last year he didn't dominate the backhand. He was kind of even or maybe under.
Yeah.
But now he's hitting, like against Alcaraz the other day, he had more RPMs on the backhand overall in the match.
Yep.
That's crazy as well, because then he's got a big forehand, you know, and then the backhand is even bigger. The opponent, like, what is he going to do? So
then how important, Ugi, is the serve to make a successful clay court player?
Okay, for the serve, it's tough to hit bombs, right? Because the surface, you know, it slows down so much. So you need that big kick serve. So you need a huge kick, like Zverev kick. He's mm-hmm. huge kick. He's like so tall. So he just kicks that ball wide, so high to the back end of the guy. So this guy's got ball above the shoulder height. So it's especially with one error, it's tough to, you know, keep that ball rallying.
Yeah.
So you need a big kick serve, especially on the ad side, big kick wide, like 80%, maybe even 90% of the time, and just a little variation to the tee. But so it's that sets up the forehand as well. So on clay, the pattern is kick serve to the back end, move to your left right away, hit a forehand on second yeah. shot. That's a right hand.
To open up the court, right hander way. Yeah.
For sure. I mean, lefty would be a little.
The slice helps, but it's not as effective.
You're right. It's not, because it slows down. Plus, it's to the forehand of the opponent, and the opponent's going to be on the run a little bit, but he can just whack mm-hmm. that shot so hard. So yeah. it's not as effective. You're right. Like on deuce side, if you go wide, even slice hard, that's going to slow down on the clay, and that's going to set up a little bit easier shot. So you might want to kick wide, even just you know, accelerate it a little bit like Federer did.
Yeah. Well, also look, going into the women's, Iga Świątek has come out and said, "Me, Sabalenka, Rybakina are the best players on tour, honestly."
Okay, she said that.
Well, she's number one, Sabalenka's two, Coco Gauff is three, and mm-hmm. Rybakina is four. So
yeah.
she did not include Coco in that. I found yeah. that a little bit shady. She kind of Taylor Swift Coco.
Yeah,
I'm going to bring that up because Taylor Swift's album dropped April 19th, and I've listened to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Plus the bonus anthology twice, ooh, Oogie. So that's going to be a newsy notes.
That's awesome. I can't wait to hear that. But
yeah, but what do you think about that? That she was just saying they're the best.
I totally agree. Sorry. I totally agree. I can't put Coco in that top three. Not right now. You know, she won the U.S. Open, which is great, but with the forehand still an issue, I can't see her being in that top, because serve is okay. Forehand is up and down. So, I mean, Rybakina's serve and game is just, she's a big hitter. And Sabalenka as well. And Świątek wins a lot, and she's, you know, super spinny with the ground strokes. So that's the top three right there. And then you have Coco and other girls, other women right after that. But for sure, that's the top three. I totally agree with Iga.
Okay, so on the women's side, okay, we're going to be looking to those top three. I'm still going to be Team Coco. Let's pull your forehand and serve together, Coco, and just start making higher balls. Sometimes I'll watch her play a service game, and I'll be like, what happened here? It's like you literally broke yourself.
Yeah.
So she just got to focus on how to not break herself. Because a lot of the time she's giving the point away on her service games.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously Brad's in her corner and her team, they're going to figure it out. But I think mentally she's got to figure out why she is doing that to herself.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. those three girls, that Świątek, Sabalenka, Rybakina, they don't really break themselves.
That's right.
And that's
you have to beat them. If you yeah. want to beat, you have to beat them. You have to get
they
that
They might have a little meltdown here and there, but they're not going to fall apart. Now, Sabalenka used to break herself yeah. all the time, right? But she's right. now pulled it together. It'll be interesting to see when she comes back out how she fares mentally, mm-hmm. right? I think she'll be fine.
Oh, she'll be hungry.
yeah.
I think she'll be way hungry.
But those three that Świątek mentioned, they do not break themselves. I'll say it again. And that's probably why Iga said,
yeah,
they're the best three, because right yeah, yeah. now they're not giving away their serves.
That's right. I think mentally and the overall caliber of the game, it's super strong. I mean, they're strong. They attack. They're on seriously, the attitude, it's like they have everything going. Coco's a little bit behind. She needs to get that. Because if we compare shot by shot, the serve and the forehand with these four women, come on, Coco's in a different category under a little bit on this serve and forehand.
Yeah, not the backhand and the movement, but the serve and the forehand.
No, for sure.
And look.
The movement, I think Coco, yeah. She's probably number one. She yeah. moves so well on the court. Coco's movement is amazing. But for the forehand and serve, she's a little
yeah,
bit under.
Well,
so she needs to work on that.
It shows you, though, what we talked about, Danielle Collins winning Miami Charleston. the serve, forehand, control the center of the court.
Yeah.
That's why those three women, Swiatek, Rybakina, Sabalenka, are in that group together. And look, Collins is able to do it. Now, she's not going to get in that group because she's retiring, but she had the game kind of that big pop power.
Hey, she now, could step in that group. Like,
yeah, I don't know about summer, the movement. You know? I wouldn't no, put her right. in the movement of those.
Yeah, but the forehand four. And back, forehand, backhand, and return yes. serve and serve.
I would put in.
She could be in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
She wins those big tournaments because there's Roland Garros, Wimbledon, WTA 1000, and then US Open at the end of summer. So there's a lot of great tournaments coming up. And if Daniel Collins can reach finals and beat consistently these top three women, we'll put her in the mix and being there, of course.
But it is interesting that Iga was like, it's kind of shaded Coco there.
It was clear.
So,
it was
Coco, clear. Let's get your stuff together.
I mean,
and pull it out and show Miss Iga you can hang.
Yeah, but I mean, Coco's career is going great.
Yeah, she's fine. It's just kind of funny.
There wouldn't be any shame of being number four on the list with those three in front.
No.
I mean,
I'm sure she's like, hey, I'm one. Look, if you're the player, you got to look at yourself as one.
For sure. She has to think that because fake it until you believe. And you mean, she has to believe that. But those three girls in front, I mean, those are big gangs right there. I mean, Rybakina, when she hits that forehand and serve, and it's tough to deal with. You know,
but
it's
you know
dominant.
What? At the U.S. Open, they all went down, and guess who won? Coco. Yeah.
Could happen.
So, yeah. It could happen. Women's tennis, Oogie. More so than men's tennis. There's a lot of mental mind games that go on just on the women's side that if somebody comes in is just locked in and doesn't let any mental like get in like Serena did.
Distractions and everything.
They could
just
dominate.
You're right. It's a lot of emotions on the women's tour, you know?
A lot of emotion.
If you control your emotions and you're in control of your game and you can stay cold towards the rest of whatever is happening out there, then you're focused, and like Coco did at the US Open. That's why she won. She was so focused. She believed she could have. She believed she was winning that tournament. And if you believe 100%, you're going to win that tournament. You really, you know, it's going to happen every time, but you really can do it.
Yeah, you got to be like the competitive killing calm. Your mind has to go there. So you know when you're like focused, and it just is clear the mechanism. It is like For Love of the Game, Kevin Costner. Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah. I remember.
And he made you walk. I've watched that with you. It's one of my mom's favorite. And he's like, clear the mechanism. Okay. Well, in tennis, that happens. And it's in the zone, obviously. But I like to say, like, you're competitively in the killing calm, and nothing's going to affect you.
You're right.
And you're just going to go out there and battle hard and beat them down.
You're so right, because we talk in our podcast before, of course, of the mental side, but it's like a mountain. So on one side, it's like, you're too pumped to win. I need to win. I'm going to win. You're too pumped. You're too cranked up. So that's not going to happen because you need to be calm to put the ball in play. Mm-hmm. And the other side of the mountain over here, it's like, I don't care. What am I doing here? Can I do something else? So in between, you need to be on top of that mountain right there. And then during the match, a lot of times you go either that way or that way a little bit. And then, oops, when you realize it, whoops, you get back up there to make sure you perform at the top of the and your best. So sometimes like you're winning and it's like, okay, I'm going to win. And oh, no, you're going down a little bit because you're
down.
Too pumped.
You gotta get
you're
back
too cranked.
Up.
Okay, I'm going to chill. Okay, this is only a practice. You know, the internal dialogue we have, we're
like,
crazy.
Yeah, and then
tennis players are crazy because we have so much.
You're by yourself and you have to do everything. But when you're not having that dialogue and you just know what to do, then it's deadly. It's like it's the best feeling, though.
It is. The Inner Game of Tennis, one of the best books ever written, Timothy Galloway.
Look,
because
even though playing my little pro set, because I'm like trying to help everybody get better. So I'm missing like beating people. So for those three games, I was not going to let anybody win. That guy had the killing calm right there, Oogie.
Your instincts just came back.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think of anything except the ball.
You see, I mean, it's still in you. It's still in you.
It's still come on. There.
You've been doing this for so long.
I feel like I need to find a doubles partner and get back on the tour in 6 months. And that would be fun, huh?
Seriously. Yeah, for sure. And
okay. I'm so thinking, yeah. Moving on from that, I got some newsy notes for you. And then we're going to wrap up this podcast. We always are like, oh, this is going to be a quick one because it's clay season. And then we just have so much to discuss and we have fun.
We're in 50 minutes right now.
We are. That's all right. It's okay. Okay. Newsy notes, Oogie.
Okay.
That was a good, the ball is in Oogie's court on clay court. We will continue that during the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah. We'll put some more stuff in there for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, newsy notes, Miss Zendaya is everywhere. She's on the cover of Vogue.
She did
her Challengers premiere in LA.
Yeah, Brad Gilbert went. Movies out, right? Oh yeah, Challengers.
Yeah, Challengers is coming out. I think it's coming out this week.
Brad Gilbert saw a few days ago the little trailer.
His family went. It was a fun time in LA. She did a little retrospective with her stylist Law Roach. He's kind of her creative director stylist. Really cool guy. He's dressed her really well this whole season. I mean, they've been together since she was like 15. But anyway, she did her Venus and Serena retrospective. It's on Instagram, on Law Roach's Instagram. And Venus and Serena had this Vogue story in the late 90s when they were first making their mark, and they had their beads. So they were in their white beads.
Oh, yeah.
And they were in black and white striped Carolina Herrera gowns posing together on a couch. So Law Roach came up with this idea of finding the gown, putting Zendaya in beads, and he posed her like they were on a couch. And he was like, these were the best of all time. Thank you. And this was our inspiration. So that was a little cool shout out.
Really cool.
Right? That was super cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I did talk about that. I listened to Miss Taylor Swift's album. Okay. First I listened to Beyonce's. So I went country.
Ooh.
I listened to her album like in the bath the last 2 weeks.
How was it?
Okay. I liked it. It was country, a little bit soul, a little bit Beyonce and some Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson mixed in. I liked how she mixed it up and is playing with the different genres. Okay. So now Miss Taylor Swift album comes out April 19th. Okay. Well, April 19th was when the shot was heard around the world in the revolution.
Jeez. Okay.
So against the British, right? Okay. Whoa. She broke up with a British guy, Joe.
Oh yeah.
The actor, Joe Alwyn. Okay, shot heard around the world. No coincidence. She's very methodical about what she does. We know this. All right, so Oogie. New York Times called it self-indulgent, the album.
Mm-hmm.
Rolling Stone said it's an instant classic, and you come for the torture and you stay for the poetry. So I was like reading these reviews and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to give my Alexandra review. So drive is like 45 minutes now with the mudslides and all the construction. So that's plenty of time to listen to the whole. So I listened to most of it. And then on the way back, I listened to it and finished it. And she had a surprise second album come out. So I listened to that too. All right.
How was it?
My thoughts are, I'm still Swifty. I feel like she's going to get flack for it because she's doing revenge songs and she's doing Tortured, and nobody does that better than Taylor Swift. But I think you really have to look into it. And she kind of went into like Sylvia Plath kind of style, like dark. She went dark. She added some drug stuff in there. She added some cuss. She's like 34-year-old Taylor Swift. And then all of a sudden in the next track, she has a song, Alchemy. I think it's called The Alchemy. I might not get that right. But about, she did sneak in Travis Kelce.
Ooh.
In there. Yeah, because she's saying, these are her lyrics. Shirts off and your friends lift you up. Beer sticking to the floor. Where's the trophy? He just comes running over to me. Okay, that's track 15. That's definitely Travis Kelce. That's not Joe, the British guy.
For sure.
I liked her Goodbye London song, but the best song Okay, revenge. Yeah. If you have anybody that you just can't stand and shades you and just has caused you a lot of trouble, then you want to listen to Thank You, Amy.
Okay.
Okay, Oogie.
Who's
and
Amy?
I'm going to say the K is capitalized, the I is capitalized.
Okay.
And the M is capitalized. What does that spell?
Kim.
Yes. Who's a famous Kim?
Kardashian.
Yes. Remember Kanye West and Taylor Swift's feud?
Ooh.
Ooh, well, she just put something else out there. So shots heard around the world, Oogie.
Gotta like that.
So when you have time with Anique, I'm going to tell you, listen to the Tortured Poets Department.
There you go.
It's quite the ride.
Jeez. Can't wait to watch
that. I like it. Look, New York Times was a hater. Rolling Stone was calling her iconic. She kind of reminded me of Carly Simon a bit with this album, because Carly Simon used to do, like, she was lyrical and she wasn't like the most amazing singer. She has a song called Actress that I really like, and she kind of reminds me of like the 70s,
yeah,
those kind of writers. And she references a couple of them too in the album. So
Carly Simon,
yeah.
Carly Simon was somebody very, very powerful when she wrote music and stuff.
Yeah.
And the songwriter.
Taylor Swift is definitely a wordsmith. Now, did she give us a lot of music? Definitely. She must have been writing all those breakup songs for the past 6 years and just storing them up.
Yeah, that's right.
I was going to say,
she could have written that, I mean, lately, but yeah, she's, for over a year, she's been writing.
All right, so we got our Taylor newsy notes. Okay, golf. Nelly Korda just made history tying. Who did she tie, Oogie? Nancy Lopez and?
Yeah, Annika Sorenstam from Sweden.
Yes.
And five wins in a row. Wow, that's
five consecutive wins in a row on the LPGA.
That is tough to do. I mean, think about that for tennis. If you win five tournaments in a row, has anybody done that?
I think Swiatek went on her run 2 years ago. I don't know if she won five. She did win a bunch.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know if she won five in a row.
You're right. It was a lot because like 40,
it was a lot.
40 something wins or
It was up until Wimbledon. I'll have to look that up and talk about it next week. But hey, congratulations, Nelly Korda, sister of who?
Well, sister of Jessica Korda, of course, but her father is very famous. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, but
Peter.
Peter Korda, but also who's Mr. Young Korda?
Oh yeah, Sebastian.
Yeah, you can't forget Seb Korda.
That's
we
true.
We got to look out for him this clay season, right?
That's true. Oh yeah, he's playing good.
Yeah, he's playing better. And Peter Korda obviously won the Australian Open. Nelly Korda is the most dominant golfer in golf right now. So Peter Korda picked the right sport for his daughters.
Oh, for sure. He said right then he made them pick golf, both of them, because it was going to be a much easier path to win. And Sebastian had predispositions, for tennis.
But also their mom played tennis. And the women's tour is tough. It's tough for women to play tennis around the world year after year. It's not easy.
It's tough.
I'm sure golf is tough as well.
Of course.
Just tennis is rough.
Yeah.
We know this.
I can't have three of my kids in tennis. It's going to be too rough. So he's like,
yeah, you've got, you and well,
put two
you,
girls in
you
golf.
Have, and you have two in tennis.
Yeah.
So you
exactly.
know. Yeah. All right, Oogie, this has been a lot of fun. I'm going to give you the quote.
Let's hear
quote
it.
Quote of our podcast.
What is it?
Okay, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The glory is not winning here. The glory is in practicing.
Okay.
Enjoy every day. Enjoy to work hard. Try to be a better player than before.
Mm-hmm.
You don't lose. You can't enjoy the victories. So I have to accept both things.
Wow, that's well said, because the process is more important than the result at the end. Of course, we like the result, but enjoy the process. And I have no idea who said that, though. I mean,
well, think about it.
Maybe Nadal, because he's, end of the career. And
yes, it is Rafa Nadal.
It is.
It's a great quote. I mean, he's had great quotes over the years, But I think this sums it up how he's feeling, right? The glory is in practicing. Enjoy every day. Enjoy to work hard. Try to be a better player than before, right? Oh. If you don't lose, you can't enjoy the victories.
That's so true.
Okay, 14-time French Open champion. He has to accept both things. He's saying that, and he's won one of the most of all time he's won, right? I mean, and here he is trying to get the glory in his practice so that he can enjoy the victories when they happen and enjoying his practice.
Yeah, wow.
And I think that gets lost in translation. Sometimes players don't enjoy their practice.
You're right. And that's so him. I mean, enjoy every day, every practice, treat it like an honor to get there, to be
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's an honor to play tennis. It's an honor to have a chance to play professional tennis, first of all.
Exactly.
And to just be on the court and to play tennis is enjoyable, and you have to love it, and you have to love practicing to work hard to get the victory. You got to love all of it, because tennis is tough. Tennis is amazing. It's tragic. I could write a whole poetry Taylor Swift song on tennis. Maybe
That's
we should
true.
Do that one podcast. There's so many words for it. But at the end of the day, you walk off the court when you play well. And even today, when I won those three games in a row, you walk off the court with endorphins feeling fabulous, right? So yeah. You could be at the U.S. Open or you could be on a little court and you could still walk off feeling great.
Hey, it's the same feelings. Seriously,
yeah.
When you
so that's
you win
basically
the US Open
what Nadal is saying, right? The glory yeah. is in practicing, that he gets to go out there and practice, and then his victories will come. And if he doesn't get the big victories that everybody wants him to get, he's okay with that saying goodbye.
Hey, that's it. And hopefully he gets a great, you know, end of career, and it ends up on a high note, whatever that note will be. Because yeah. We want that. We want that yep. for him and Roger and Djokovic and all the great players that have given so much joy to us to watch
and
accomplished
and
so much.
You want that for every professional tennis player that has worked their butt off.
Yeah.
And blood, sweat, and tears. You want everybody when they walk away to feel good about it and, you know, to walk away and
hey.
Like feel good and say, well, I put everything out there I could and it's okay.
We'll have to put Andy Murray in there.
Don't start retiring everybody to the farm, Oogie.
Gael Monfils, Stan Wawrinka.
Yeah, they're not done
we
yet.
Want to put all these guys
yeah.
in there. Have
yeah.
have great
I mean,
end of career.
Yeah, and everybody's fighting the fight. So that was the quote. It's a pretty awesome quote. We might have to pull that out again at some point, Oogie.
For sure. We'll quote him again.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Of course, our nice quick podcast.
Hey.
We went a little longer, but that's okay. We had a lot to say.
An hour of fun for everybody.
An hour of fun. All right. Well, this has been Serving Aces. I'm Alexander Stevenson, and we will see you next time. Have a
Take
good
care.
Rest of the week.
Yeah. Bye.